Hello, everybody, and welcome to Kentucky Ag Matters, a podcast designed to inform and educate both producers and consumers about all matters affecting agriculture. On this week's show, we visit with Mr. Eddie Melton, president of Kentucky Farm Bureau. And as always, we'll wrap things up with this week's timely tip. Thanks so much for joining us. We hope you enjoy the show. Well, hello, everybody.
Hey, hello, Jay.
Good morning.
It's wet right now. I don't know how it'll be when this finally airs, but right now we've come from cold and hard to wet and
sloppy.
Sloppy. That's the only way to describe
mud season. I think I've seen that a good bit the last couple of days. Welcome to mud season.
Yeah. You know, I thought we were really in some swanky digs when we were in Farm Bureau in Louisville. And, hey, this beats that by a ton.
Pretty nice.
This is really nice. Really nice.
Now, and you
really
know,
good antique equipment in here. It's pretty neat. I mean, it's really neat.
I
really like this guy's
stuff.
This is my style.
I just want to say we are in Webster County, Kentucky, recording today in the town of Seabree, Kentucky.
Yeah. And it's not too far to the line, though.
It isn't, but it's still in Webster County, buddy.
That's right. Well, you have to pay a tax to get in here. I'll just tell you
that's
that.
Right. So, that's exactly right.
And if you think the tax coming in was bad, wait till you try to leave.
That's right.
But they know you'll pay that one gladly on the way out.
Oh, now there we go.
But we are recording today's episode. Well, we're recording today. It is the end of January the 25th. This won't air, I guess, till probably March.
Yep.
But we are recording this episode today at Eddie Melton's farm. So we're here in his shop, his office.
Really nice.
We do appreciate you allowing us to come in and kind of take over your office for a little bit, Eddie, and to record this with you.
Well, it's good to be with y'all, and we welcome anybody here anytime. It's when we built this office building, it kind of took on a life of its own. We actually have a wooden wheel wagon inside the office. It's been on this farm. I'm fifth generation on this farm, and I've got some deeds over here on the wall where it was bought. My great great grandfather bought one of the first tracks here in 1900. So,
wow.
And this wagon is, I don't know when the wagon came here, but it's been a part of it forever. And my grandfather actually sat on it a lot. It was kind of his spot to sit on the farm.
And that's cool.
And so when we were going to build the office, my partner, Patrick Howard, was talking about what are we going to do with the wagon? Because we tore an old building down to put this office here. And I said, I don't know. We'll just put it in a barn somewhere. And he said, we don't need to put it in a barn. He said, let's put it in the office. So we'd already had the plans drawn up to build this office. Well, we expanded the office to get a wooden wheel wagon in here. But anyway, it's kind of unique, and it's a part of the history of our farm. So
it's really neat. Really neat.
Well, and it is. When you come in here, and because I know you all that's listening can't see it, but when you come into the office, that's the first thing you're going to see when you come in the doors to the office. And it's pretty cool.
You know, I always enjoy history of farms and different things and talking to people about their farms and how many generations it's been on the farm. And, you know, I just think that's real, you know, it's real special to me, and I'm sure it is to Mr. Eddie, too, I'm sure.
This farm's kind of got a unique story, too, and I'm probably telling too many of my stories here. But so the farm was in my dad's family. And actually, my great-great-grandfather that started this farm, he was actually worked at a bank in Seabree. And so he was buying the farm, and people were farming it for him. But if you go back, it's kind of a funny story. My mom's dad actually was a tenant farmer for him on this farm.
No,
and my mom's sister was born on this farm.
Oh,
now, mom wasn't born here, so I've got both families have kind of been tied to this farm for a long time.
That's cool.
That's pretty unique.
It is.
I mean, I've not heard of that. Of course, you know, they'll say, Vicki, because it's Webster County, that there's probably a lot
going on
with that. You know that.
I'm sure,
But we're pretty proud of the things we do here in Webster County.
Yes, we are.
I thought I'd get in front of that.
Yes.
You should be. To have a family history on the same farm for that long, that's something that's becoming much less common these days than it once was.
themselves.
And in both sides, my mom and my dad's family both being on this track of land that they both worked here. That doesn't happen very often.
No,
so
that's pretty neat.
Yeah, you know, we've said a lot of times on this podcast about agriculture and the deep roots of agriculture for folks that grew up on a farm or and, you know, it is part of you. And but when you hear, you know, you talking about the history of this place that we're sitting right now, that it is part of you. It's your heritage, the legacy that was left, and then you're going to leave this legacy on. And I mean, I think that's just a special part about agriculture
Absolutely.
And we don't want to forget it. We want to keep telling that. We want to keep telling our story. We want to keep telling about the generations before us and work to make it better for the generations that's to come.
And if my family hadn't been here doing this, you know, I probably wouldn't be doing it. You know, that's just the thing. Yep. But if those folks didn't sacrifice for the things they did, we probably wouldn't get to do what I'm getting to do today.
That's exactly right.
That's all of us sitting here in one way or the other.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Yep. That is
I always enjoy looking at old equipment and looking at Mr. Eddie's got a case back here behind us that has all kinds of old toys in it, which I think is really neat. I always I am a collector of a few toys along through the years and different things, and my grandkids do as well. So I thought that was really interesting. And we've got some of my dad's old toys, the little trucks and things that kind of like you've got. So that's really neat, really neat.
I was telling David I had an orange road grader identical to that one when I was little. Yeah, identical to it.
Well, if you don't think my mom saved everything, that box there was what those toys came in. And the box that some of my toys came in, it's got my dad's name on it. And that box of toys cost $7.96, and the tax was due. And my mother saved that box, and it's still intact in there. So I think my mother saved everything.
I'd say she did, yes.
You know, those folks back those days, they did that. You know, my grandparents did that, a lot of that. They kept stuff, and I can remember cleaning out one of the little houses, and they had kept all the egg cartons from all those years, and there's no telling how many egg cartons we got rid of. But
you know, that's something that we can't associate with quite as well, but all of the people we're talking about, our parents and more particularly our grandparents, were Depression era families. And they learned the value of keeping every little thing because you didn't know when you were going to need it. When my grandfather passed away, Eddie, he had a 55-gallon drum that was running over with nuts and bolts in the top of one of his barns, and we couldn't move it. We had to empty it about a third of the way out before we could pick it up with a loader of a tractor.
They might need that.
They might need that. If I had a dollar for every time I heard, we might need that somewhere for a bent nail, you know. We might need that to hold a hasp closed on a gate or something.
I get accused of that around here sometimes now, so it still works.
Well, it's you know, it's a pleasure to be here, Mr. Eddie, and of course, you know, you were elected here a month or so ago, or 2 months ago, I guess, or a month ago, a month and a half, you know, as the new president of the Kentucky Farm Bureau, and congratulations. You know, we're proud to have you representing us on Kentucky Farm Bureau for sure.
Well, thank you. It is an honor to get to do this, and sometimes I look back at how this happened. You think, how did this really happen? I mean, I started out, of course, Farm Bureau's been a big piece of my life for a long time since I came home from college, and things just happen, and timing happens, and you get opportunities, and I surely never thought I'd be doing something like this. When I started out in my Farm Bureau career, I just enjoyed going to the meetings and being with other young farmers, and one thing led to another, but I believe in what this organization stands for and what it does, and, you know, we say we're the voice of agriculture, and I think that's what I want to continue to try to do, and we've done over the years, that it's so important that farmers are busy. We get on the farm, and we get to working hard, and there's things that kind of get on the wayside.
Yep.
But somebody's got to be there to advocate for agriculture, and Farm Bureau has always been there, and it has the resources to be able to do what we need to do. And I'm just honored to take on this role. And nobody does these things alone. No, it takes a whole team. And we've got a board of directors and the executive committee with me, Shane and Larry, just got elected. I'm excited for them. they're getting busy. They're learning out what you do when you take on these roles, but they're going to do a good job. So I'm excited for them, and we've got it. We kind of cover all the bases with the three of us, and that's kind of what's unique about what we are.
You've got two really good people there around you. I mentioned before we started that I was actually born in the same hometown Larry's from. But
that's right.
What I didn't tell you, Shane and I went to college together. Okay. We were in school at Eastern Kentucky University at the same time.
There you go.
So good folks.
Shane had a good career as a VOAG teacher, and he loves those kids and tried to get them in it. And so hopefully one thing you can bet that Shane's going to push me on taking care of VOAG and those ag students. So I know that's where his heart's at. So
we know for the folks that are listening to this podcast, we're going to introduce you to those folks, Shane and Larry, both here in the next few weeks. And if you're listening to this, I'll be looking forward to those. And, they did a fantastic job. And I think they were a little worried when we first walked in and didn't know what to expect. But they eased right into it and did a really good job. So I think the leadership team there at Kentucky Farm Bureau was in really good hands. And I think y'all will do a good job.
Thank you.
And most people don't really realize, I know that I certainly didn't, for a long time, just the time commitment that it takes to step in those leadership roles. You don't step into that executive committee and think that's you're going to go to a few meetings a year and maybe take a few phone calls.
Yeah. Take a few fun trips. That's what some people think we do.
Yeah, take a fun trip and then come back home and everything be like it was, but it's not like that at all. When you step into that role, you're making a commitment to be the voice of agriculture, to help be that voice and to advocate for all of Kentucky agriculture and work with these other states on the national level. And you're not just doing work in a small area. You're covering a large area. And to do that, it takes a lot of time. It takes a lot of preparation. And we appreciate folks like you, Eddie, that do step up, because we all know in agriculture, most people, farmers, they're happiest when they're on the farm.
That's right.
And they're either in a tractor or they're working cattle or they're, hauling grain or whatever it is. That's where they're the happiest. And so, we just really appreciate you folks, all of you all, and the ones that has done it before you.
That's right.
The work that they've done and the time commitment that they put forward to make this organization what it is.
You miss out on a lot of the local things. I mean, I miss our County Farm Bureau meetings. I don't get to many of those. I don't get to any extension meetings, Vicki. I'll go ahead and say that. I'm sorry. I just don't. I mean, I would love to, because that's the people that have supported me over the years. But we're doing what we do. And then, of course, you take on the role from the Federation side of our organization, and then you've got the insurance company. Mm-hmm. And it's such a big business. Probably when I started out early in my Farm Bureau career, I didn't really realize what it was and the impact that it has. But, if you take 474,000 family members, that's family members. And that's probably a fourth of the population of the state of Kentucky are Farm Bureau members. And they expect us to take care of their needs. And that's what our company does. Not only do we advocate for agriculture, but we protect those people's assets. Yep. And it's a big company. We do it the right way. Our folks, when you go into a local office, you get to meet with someone that you know. And I think that's one thing that makes Farm Bureau what it is that it's that commitment that you've got somebody there that cares about you, that you know in your local community, whether it's a CSR, an agent, agency manager, whatever it is. And then at a time, if you have a loss, we're actually going to send someone out to you, our adjusters, the work that they do, and talk to you about the issue that you've got and try to settle that claim with you. Yeah. So I think it makes us unique in the space of the insurance company. But I'm proud of the work we've got. We've got a great team in Louisville, and just excited to take this on. And, there'll always be issues. But we take those head on, and, our membership sets our policy, and that's where we're going to be.
All right. Well, even though you can't come to the local extension meetings, Eddie, it's okay. I mean, I understand, but you do support extension in a different way. Because you all work really closely with the College of Ag, you know, the University of Kentucky College of Ag, and through that you are supporting extension, not just Webster County.
I know that
you're supporting all 120 extension offices. So you're forgiven for not coming to the local extension office meetings.
Of course, Dean Cox does such a good job on our board, and she's a supporter of Farm Bureau too, and we talk about things all the time. So just appreciate her leadership, but extension is so important. I think when you think of extension and you think of Farm Bureau, they're kind of intertwined with each other, because it's in a local community, it's the same people.
Yes.
I mean, it is the same people. The people that go to extension meetings or on extension councils are the same people that are probably sitting in the room in the Farm Bureau meetings too.
Absolutely.
Or go to an annual meeting. So I think that work together is, again, y'all are out there with the producers every day. And the good thing that is that y'all feel free, and a lot of agents around the state feel free to contact us if there's mm-hmm. something going on. And if people are listening to this, I want them to know that we're here for them. If they can't get me, get with some of our area program directors. But we're supporters of extension. I think everybody knows that. But I just want people to hear that we're there, and we'll do what we have to do to help extension.
That's right. I mean, I agree. We've talked about that before. Mm-hmm. And if you're an ag agent, then you can't hardly be an ag agent and not talk about Farm Bureau. I mean, that's just part of it. And we do go hand in hand. But, you know, we've had you on before, but for those that maybe are new listeners and maybe didn't get to hear the first one, just spend a minute talking about your farm here and kind of what you do on the farm here. And then you mentioned your partner, Patrick, but it's a little bit unique because, you know, a lot of times partners are, you know, they're brothers or they're, you know, father and son or daughter, but your story's just a little bit different. So
you would leave it to me that my story would probably be different, Vicki. So, well, of course, I took this role on on the executive committee in 2008, and thinking like you did, well, that job's not that busy. But the day I got elected as second vice president, Mark Haney's brother came up to me after it was over with. And he said, Eddie, you can't farm like you do and do this job. I said, Don, I got this. You don't have to worry about this. I've got this. I can do it. Well, I did for a while. And I had some really good retired employees that helped me. And the employee that's still here with us. So they kept it together. But it was getting away from me. And as technology changed and being away from the farm, there's things that you let slip. So I struggled for a while trying to figure out what I was going to do, whether I was going to stop the farm and rent it out to somebody, which I guess bless the person that ever thought they could rent my farm, because it would be hard to do. So, but anyway, but it, you know, it'd been a lifetime of putting this together.
Sure.
I mean, it started for generations to do it. And I thought, am I going to be the one that stops that? Yeah. And of course we just have the one daughter, and she's in Tennessee. So she wasn't going to come back to the farm. So got to thinking about it, and I had a really good relationship with Patrick Howard that worked for Southern States for a number of years. Actually, when I would get in a bind, Patrick would bail me out. He would come out here and help do things. And so there was some kind of crisis that had happened out here in about 2014. I called Patrick to help me out of whatever the situation was, and I don't remember what it was then. But anyway, so I said, Patrick, why don't you quit working for Southern States and come farm with me? Well, nothing was said, and he went on and did it. Well, about 2 weeks later, he came out here and he asked me if I was serious. He said, well, what you told me, were you were serious? I didn't even remember what I told him. I said, well, you're going to have to tell me what I told you. So he told me what I'd said, and he said, wanted to know if I was serious or, you know, just in the moment. And I said, well, I was in the moment probably, but I am serious. If you think, and he'd always wanted to farm.
Sure.
So we sat down and worked out an agreement that he was going to come in and basically take over the farm, and I was going to be that weekend warrior that came in and wondered what they did and why they did it and questioned every move they made. And but he's done a great job with the farm, and I'm really proud of the work he's done, and it's still going because of him. So I'm really proud of it.
Yeah. You know, that's really unique to be able to find somebody that you trust to work with your family and on this operation and everything. And, you know, it would be good if we had more opportunities like that, if folks that, you know, maybe didn't have a family member, but somebody young was, you know, interested in getting involved in the farm.
I tell you, we talk about it all the time, transferring the next generation. But if we don't do it, who's going to do it? Mm-hmm. And a lot of families have children that don't want to farm. But you can sit down and you can work this thing out, I can assure you. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's going to be a lot of give and take when you do that. Family members can't leave. And but there's got to be give and take. And I'm sure Patrick does a lot more taking from me. But he's embraced the technology. He's great. There's a lot of people that Patrick worked with over the years that still call him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And talk to him about stuff he does. So I couldn't be more proud of what he's done with our operation, and he's growing it, and so we're excited about what he's doing.
I had the opportunity to work with Patrick. Actually, he was my boss, actually. But before, about 18 months, 2 years before I came to Extension, I went to work for Southern States, and I was able to work with Patrick, and he's top-notch. I mean, he is... He's good at what he does, and whatever he does, he's gonna do a good job, and he's gonna give it 100%. And so I don't think you could have a better partner than Patrick.
You know, we talk a lot about succession plans and different things, Mr. Eddie. And do you have any advice for somebody that maybe looking to do something like that you've done, or you know, maybe they're got a family member that wants to come on? I know, like you said, there's lots of give and take that has to happen. But, you know, any advice for folks that may be interested in doing that or trying to find somebody?
You know, if you're just looking for somebody, I guess I watched Patrick for a lot of years.
Yeah.
And I watched what he did, and he worked with me. And I've always said in my farming operation, I wasn't that smart. I just surrounded myself with a lot of smart people that made me look really good. I mean, I'll just tell you, that's a big piece of what you do in agriculture, is that you get people around you that are really good at what they do, and you can seek those people out and let them help you get there. And that's what Patrick did with me, and I just saw something in him that I knew he'd always wanted to farm, and you could see it when he would come out here. You could see what he wanted to do. And, you know, good Lord takes care of some things, and I think that was an opportunity for both of us. And if you – you know, I think you just got to sit down and talk to people, and you got to be open with them. You can go to every accountant and every lawyer, and probably everybody in the world can advise you on what you need to do. But the trust factor there, that you work with someone, that you're actually partnering with somebody on something that's been generations to do.
Yeah.
But it's worked for us. And again, I don't see anything happening. He's especially with my role now as president, he probably will see less out of me now.
I think we see that model in a lot of other businesses where employees work themselves up through the ranks and maybe attain a leadership position and end up in ownership of a business. Mm-hmm. But we just don't see it as much in agriculture.
No, and I, you know, we're probably going to have to, though, if we're going to continue on. We're going to have to figure out a way to do something, and I, you know, we'll see how this goes. But I, you know, I've got some thoughts on some things, and we'll, I don't know, you know, there's just so much. Agriculture is so important, especially here in Kentucky. Mm-hmm. And again, we are smaller farmers, but I think there's a lot of opportunities for young people to be able to do some really unique things and keep agriculture strong here in the state. So I hope that we can work on some of those things.
Well, that's great advice and, you know, some really good information. What are some of the things that, as president, that maybe you want to work on or that you see, maybe even some issues coming down the road that you feel like are going to affect agriculture?
Well, we've first off, I have to say that our Of course, we've got all of our youth programs to get young people involved mm-hmm. in our organization. And our women's committee does amazing work with that in all the counties across the state, because I think that's the start probably of someone's, as a young person coming into a youth contest or discussion mm-hmm. meet or coming into some of our young farmer programs. So those, I think those continue on. I'm really excited. We've got a new young farmer director here, Taylor Nash is his name. He's really energetic, and I think he's going to take our young farmer program has been great. We've mm-hmm. had great people that have been that, but boy, Taylor is energetic, and I'm excited about the work that he's doing. And I went to the Young Farmer Conference this weekend, or a couple of weeks ago, for their weekend that they had in Covington. And there was a lot of new faces there. Mm-hmm. I mean, a lot of young people, and I've been around a while, yeah. And that's what it takes, you know. That usually you, but I think they've committed to get some new faces in that program. Yeah. So yeah. I think that one's in program. Of course, a Generation Bridge. That what we've got to keep those people involved in that middle age group to keep them involved in our organization. But ideas that I have, you know, that's one of the ideas we talked about earlier about trying to keep our young people involved yeah. and how we can get them on the farm. So that's something that I'd like to see if there's some way that we can do something with that. The future, though, there was actually a futurist that talked to at American Farm Bureau this week. They hired a futurist to come in and talk. And I'll ask you three a question, and I want each one of you to answer this question individually for me. So what color are yield signs that are on the road? If you're on a road, what color is a yield sign?
Like a variety sign?
No, the yield, like you're driving yield. Down, like you're going to yield to go right. What, yeah. Color, what color is it?
Yellow? It's red and white, isn't it?
I said
yellow, but I don't know.
Red and silver is what I was thinking, like that reflective silver prismatic material.
Man, I tell you what, we've got – so I said it was yellow also, Vicki. They changed it in 1971. It went to yellow and red and white. It went to red and white.
It's
so,
been red and white so, my whole life, so, and I missed it.
And I wasn't even driving, and I did too. But about 90% of people in the room thought it was yellow and black. And yeah. so you're the odd man out of here, David. So you got it right too. So
yep. I can attest they are the odd ones.
There you
just
go.
Kidding. I'm just kidding.
But anyway, he was talking about how we perceive things in our mind, and I think we perceive things in our mind about agriculture, and we don't look to the future of what we do, but technology is coming at us so fast yep. and the changes of things. So I think we have to embrace those as they come at us. What it's going to be, well, I don't know. I mean, I look back into just a few years back from where we are and were mm-hmm. and where we are now and the things that we're doing. It amazes me,
yep.
The technology that we've got, that we get to do the things that we get to do and how it's done. And I think we keep talking about my ancestors here on this farm, but I think back about what they would think about some of this mm-hmm. stuff yeah. that's good yeah. that we're yeah. doing here, that we've got a tractor out here that guides itself through the field and does all the things mm-hmm. that we can do. Yeah. So, but I think that keeping up with the technology is probably yeah. one of the biggest things that we will have to do as an organization to keep our members informed. But I also think that from a policy side of it, that we still have more and more people removed from the farm mm-hmm. that don't know what we're doing or why we do what we do or how we do it. Yep. And I think we have to get that message out. I think we've got to be better at probably bringing people onto our farms and showing them what we do. Mm-hmm. We can tell them anything, and we can talk about it here on a podcast, and we can tell people what we're doing. But I think if we can bring them out here to the farm and actually show them what we're doing and why we're doing it,
yep.
and that it costs, they think that we do things that are hard for the bad for the land or bad for water and all those things. And I think about all the practices that we've put on just on our farm to conserve water and to yep. keep nutrients where they are and no-till and cover crops and on and on and on. We can go to all those things, how yep. we're more efficient and do more with less. So I think we have to get people to keep telling that story and try to get people to actually put boots on the ground, if mm-hmm. if I can mm-hmm. use that, to see what we do. And I think Extension can play a great role in that too, as we educate people to do that.
I think you're exactly right. I wish there was some way we could put a dollar figure on the destruction that misinformation has caused in every form, whether we're talking about agriculture or any industry. Somebody out there is working on a misinformation campaign to point a narrative a certain way. And unfortunately, the people that we're up against are very well funded, and they're very well listened to. They hold some type of key position. They've got the public's attention.
That's right.
And somehow or another, we have that's an uphill battle for us to work against.
I think we probably need to do a better job of telling the story, but also to tell people that if you hear something, everybody's got a phone in their hand. Look, I mean, go to a reliable source and look up what you hear. Don't just believe somebody tells you, because there might be a piece of it that might be the truth, but figure out the rest of that story before you pass judgment on what somebody's doing or why they're doing it. Try to get the rest of the story and find somebody you trust to talk to.
Well, and I think that one of the things that we in agriculture particularly, we have to fight all the time is perception is reality to a lot of people. And that is not always true, but we have to think that way. I think we in agriculture have to think that way because perception is reality to a lot of people. And so if we have that mindset, then we are telling our story more. We are trying to get the word out there about what the real story is. You know, my parents told me a long time ago, I can remember them telling me, if you're going to take a stand for something, be able to explain why you're taking a stand for it.
And be informed
and
about it.
And be informed about it. Be informed about it. Be able to tell people why. So many times, people want to jump on a bandwagon about something, but if you go to asking them very much about it, they're gonna back up because it's more of a trend. It's more of the... Yeah. You know, they're just jumping on the bandwagon, so to speak.
Yep. And so, you know, as we, as y'all are talking about telling our story and doing different things, hitting those young people is so important.
Mm-hmm. It is.
And you know, those young people are. You know, we used to say 2-3 generations. I think we're more like 5-6.
Removed from the farm.
Removed from the farm. Mm-hmm. I really do. I think it's that. I think we're that far along. And you know, we've got to start with those young people and the. One of the programs that I really like that y'all do, and I don't know the name of it, you can probably name it, is when you bring all the teachers in in the summertime, and that is so important. My daughter-in-law teaches school in Trigg County.
It is.
And she had an opportunity to go to one of those, and I actually had an opportunity as an extension educator to go to one of those. Very informative.
Teacher workshops, and they get credits for it, too, because teachers have to get credits. And actually, I've heard teachers talk about the material they get, that they get a lot of good teaching material. Yes. And it is. It's important to do. And, again, that's another thing that our women's program does is they go into schools and they read agriculture books to them. So really proud of the work that they do, because you're right. If we don't start with the young people, and that's probably where we've missed out on sometimes. Yep. But, you know, you talking about being removed from the farm, and that's the problem we have with some of our policymakers right now.
Yes.
Is that they're making decisions. And they're busy. I'm not faulting those people. They're busy people. They've got stuff coming at them every day. And that's the lobbyists are there working with them. Lobbyists will our lobbyists do a great job. They tell it just like it is, but there might be others that might not tell it just exactly like it is. But if they can be informed about what it is, I think that's important.
Education. Yeah, education's key.
And our people that are calling on their legislators, you know, you need to inform yourself before you call.
Absolutely.
You know, and we encourage you to call, because I mean, that's how they understand where their constituents stand on whatever subject that they might be calling them about. So, you know, hopefully before you call, you're educated, but you know, don't be afraid to reach out to somebody, whether that's somebody at the Farm Bureau leadership that's your extension office, whatever the source, and don't necessarily believe everything you find on the internet. It may or may not be true. I used to tell people that all the time, don't believe everything you find on the internet, because it may not be true. But, you know, we want you to be educated, and we want you to call those folks, and that's how agriculture's story gets out there.
Absolutely.
And that's how, from an agriculture standpoint, to further our cause, that's how we're going to be able to do it for sure.
Absolutely.
I just wish if people, and everybody's busy, but if you get an opportunity, get to know, whether it's your magistrates in your county or your county judge, state representative, state senator, your U.S. congressman, your U.S. senator, if you get an opportunity, try to get to know them. And that way, if you build that relationship, again, that's we live in a relationship world. And if you build that relationship, if you make a phone call to them, and because they're going to get the message, but they get a lot of messages. But if they get a message of someone that they've got a relationship with that they know, and they say, you know, Vicki Shadrick difference. Will tell me exactly the truth, how it is. Yep. So I'm going to pay attention to that one. And I think that building that relationship with those people, and that's one thing that Farm Bureau does. The people that are involved in Farm Bureau, they try to get to know as we have those meetings and do things. And, again, I think that helps us because our folks do speak out, and they talk to them and they know them.
Yep, I agree. And you know, that Washington trip does so many great things up there. And I had an opportunity when I was in the LEAD program to go on the Washington, D.C. trip and got to see our legislators and talk to them. And, you know, just to see those folks come in. And when Farm Bureau comes to them to talk about a certain subject, whatever it may be, they listen.
They do.
And they, you know, Farm Bureau has some footing up there for sure.
I can go and I can talk to them. But I guarantee you, if there's 50 people that can vote for them, go up there and they talk to them about it, they'll listen a little bit more. That's more impactful right there, because if those 50 people go home tell the people they know, but they know that Farm Bureau will tell it, and our Farm Bureau folks will tell it actually like it is. Yeah.
Well, and you know, talking about the young folks and the congressional tour is one of my favorite things to go to. I have been several times. But I'll tell this story. Back several years ago, Shelby was 9 years old, and she's 23 right now, but she's 9 years old. And Eddie called me one day, and he said, well, don't you think it's about time for you to take Shelby to Washington, D.C.? And I said, you know, Eddie, it is. You know, and so me and Jamie and Shelby packed up, and we went on that congressional tour, and she was 9 years old. And, you know, Shelby, that she remembers that trip, and she talks about that trip today. And she's a teacher now. And she teaches about some things that she saw, you know, and I think Farm Bureau gives a lot of opportunities like that.
Yeah.
And to be able to go to Washington, D.C. with a group of other people, but to be there and to see, not just see the city and the history, but also when you go in there and do that Q&A, you know, with the senators. I mean, just to sit there and you're, you know, and I remember Shelby saying, I mean, they've been on TV, you know. But, you know, as a young person, I mean, they remember that. And going and standing in front of the White House and
–
and it's a tremendous trip.
Yep.
It is a tremendous opportunity. And as Farm Bureau members, if you have the opportunity to go, take that opportunity, because you will not regret it. And actually, my brother and his family are going to go this year. Yep. So my niece and nephew, this will be their second time. Yep. And my kids are grown and they're chomping at the bit. When are we going to get to go back? Yep. So.
Tell them they're going to have to get involved in Farm Bureau.
That's right. That's exactly right.
They'll get involved in Farm Bureau.
Seeing that legislative process, how important is that? As a young person, how important is that to see that?
I mean, they need to know the process.
It is.
I guarantee you go into some of the schools right now and they have no idea how our political process works.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, again, we're a democracy, and I'm so proud of that.
Mm-hmm.
And how our system works. Sometimes it seems like it's broken, but it's still the best there is. There's none any better than we do it.
Yeah, and, I wouldn't want to go to another one.
No.
That's exactly right. But I do, that trip, Vicki, you said it is probably the one that I think is probably more impactful on young people.
Yeah.
Because it's just, they need to see that process.
Yep.
And they just, if they go, they're going to get to experience it. And so it's just, I think it's a good program that we have for young people and get them involved in the political process.
Absolutely. Yep, it is.
Eddie, talk to us about how important being a grassroots organization is. I mean, how important is that to you personally, and then how important is that to Farm Bureau?
Well, so we'll talk about Farm Bureau first to me personally, but Farm Bureau, being a grassroots organization, I think it's what makes Farm Bureau what it is. We wouldn't be Farm Bureau if we didn't have grassroots. We've all got these roles. We've got a board of directors. We've got staff. We've got everybody. But, you know, it's the people in the local communities is what make this organization what it is. I mean, I think a county president is probably the most important job of any job in Farm Bureau, including mine.
Yeah.
Those people are more impactful. They're there doing it. They volunteer their time to go to a county meeting to do the work for the County Farm Bureau and to do policies, to have annual meetings, to do legislative appreciation meetings, all those things. They're the backbone of what we do. So, and a lot of our policies, I've watched it over the years. It might be two guys sitting at a feed store, or we don't have many feed stores anymore, and people don't sit around like they used to, but it's our story. And but at a restaurant, drinking coffee in the morning, at a Farm Bureau meeting and an extension meeting, talking about a problem that's out there that they've had. And the conversation kind of grows, and it ends up being a policy that's sent in by a county. Mm-hmm. And then it's adopted by the resolutions committee, and then it goes to the delegates. And I've seen it all the way through. When it goes to where there's something that's actually gets implemented into law numerous times, and it's like, wow, this process really works. And it's not me sitting up here trying to, or the executive committee or our board setting policy for Farm Bureau. It's actually the people, and then you bring in the advisory committees into that too. And when we pick those, putting people on those committees that are actually in that, whatever it is, whether they're growing beef cattle or whatever it is, that they know that industry, and they're people that you respect that make good decisions, and they make recommendations to us and how that process works. It's time consuming, and I describe our policy making process like it used to be in the tobacco industry. You never get finished with it. You're planting another crop before you sell one. So we're always in the policy making process. So I tie it back to old things always, but it is. But for me personally, you can't do this, you know. One person can't do this what this organization does. Yeah. It takes a lot of people to make it happen. I'm blessed that the membership elected me president, but I want people to give me their ideas too, because I don't know everything. Yeah. And I want people talking to me and telling me what they think, and actually telling me if I make mistakes, because I'm going to make some mistakes along the way. And it's okay to tell me if I make a mistake. You might not know exactly why I made the decision I did, but we can talk about it. You know, we don't have to. We can talk about it and discuss the issues and what's out there. And I want to be the person that people feels like they can approach and do that. I hope I'm that person. And just talk things that if you don't agree with what we're doing at Farm Bureau, but it won't be Eddie Melton's policy that we do. It'll be Farm Bureau policy. I can assure you that.
Talking about, you know, you making reference to old things. So there's a saying that I've heard for a long time too, is if you don't make any mistakes, you're not doing anything.
Hell,
yeah, that's right.
Well, I don't want to make too many, but it will.
But
probably
to say
happen.
That but we all are human, and we all are going to make mistakes, and sometimes, but that's okay. I mean, you have to move on, own up to it, and move on. So.
You know, at the time that we're recording this, you have just returned from Salt Lake City.
We did.
From the American Farm Bureau Conference. Talk just a little bit about your experience out there and some of the issues that were looked at by all of the states that were in attendance.
Well, I didn't snowboard or snow ski, so I'm still on both legs today. So
that's a good
thing. I had some people tell me that I probably needed to not do that, although there was a group that I used to go with every year and do that. We did it for a lot of years, but we don't do it anymore. But anyway, you know, again, I talked about the futurist speaker we had there, and it kind of is like our annual meeting in Kentucky, where they have a lot of programs, and actually Matt and Molly Adams were runners-up at the Achievement Award this year. I couldn't be more proud of them. Caleb Smithson was in the top 10 for the Excellence in Ag Award. And then Alex Gillis represented us in discussion meet. She did a fantastic job. I couldn't be more proud of them representing us there. But, you're probably talking more about the policy side of things, right? I'm talking about
well, let's hear about it all, because there is a lot that goes on.
There is a lot like that goes on out there, but I couldn't be more proud of those contestants that we have involved in those things, and we shone really well this year. So really proud of all those young people. But on the policy front, probably the biggest issue that faces us year in, year out is labor. And we all talk about labor, and it's a hard subject, but because it's hard. And then when you take different regions around the country, labor issues are different in different regions. But everybody's facing that, and it seems like we just keep recycling it over and over again, and we don't get anything done. And I don't know. We worked on it hard during Resolutions Committee in Washington this year. We thought we had something in place, and we come back and we relived it again this week. So, but again, that's what it is. It's about what the membership decides to do. But that's probably the biggest thing was the labor issue. And of course, Farm Bill is so important. Farm Bureau, American Farm Bureau is pushing to try to get something done this spring. But we're hoping that we can get Farm Bill in place is sooner rather than later. Well, you know, we've got an extension in place, but we need to, those reference prices probably need to be re-looked at, because we're going into a period here now of a downturn probably in pricing, and we need to be prepared for it. And we need, you know, our expenses have gone up. We know we've been in a pretty good period for agriculture here. I mean, we've tailed off a little bit here, but we haven't been back where we were. And there's nothing to say we can't go back there. If they grow a crop in Brazil and grow a crop, we grow another crop here next year. We could be in some times that some of the young people haven't seen probably in rising interest rate market. So
on the way over here today, I heard beans were off a dollar and some change. You know, so I mean,
today.
I think so.
Ouch. I hadn't seen that yet.
As Jeff Nally was telling off of Owensboro, the radio station there in Owensboro.
My goodness.
I don't know what futures contract that was, but I mean, that's what he was saying.
What month it was.
Right. I didn't pay that much attention. The dollar is what caught me.
I know. Get your attention quick.
If you listen to a lot of economists out there, they will say that we probably should have already experienced some of these downturns. We've had some, you know, real key points, especially related to grain with what's going on in Ukraine for the past 2 years, that has really bolstered those prices, or we probably would have already seen some of these turns back.
Absolutely. Well, Mr. Eddy, thank you so much for, for stepping into this role, and you've got a fantastic team. I will say the one thing about y'all that I've never been afraid to approach y'all. Y'all've always been very approachable. And talk, about subjects and whatever the subject may be, and I appreciate that.
Thank y'all. It's fun to do these, and I think when y'all probably do these, you never know where the conversation is going to go.
When y'all
start out, y'all think it may go one way, and it goes in a way. And with me telling all my stories, I'm sure it does go in a different direction.
That's what makes a show like this work, though. We try to keep it conversational rather than it being an interview. Yep. A lot of people would get dull with an interview real quick, but when you keep it a conversation and let it ebb and flow the way it wants to naturally go, I think that's what makes a show like this work.
Yeah, I do too. Absolutely. Well, before we wind it up, I would be remiss if I didn't thank you too on behalf of Webster County. We thank you. We are all very proud, and we're standing here to support you, and we do thank you.
Appreciate it. Webster County's home to me, and it always will be. It doesn't matter where I'm at. It's where my family's been forever, so it'll still be here. And when this gig's over with, I'll be back.
Well, one of the things we always do towards the end of the show, we like to wrap things up with a timely tip, whether it's something production-related or just related to the time of the year that we might be in, the season that we're in. But with all of the talk that we've had today about getting out and being that voice for agriculture, which Farm Bureau is known as, we thought a good timely tip for today would just be to get out and be an advocate for agriculture and be an advocate for your local farming community. Right now, we know a lot of farmers that do that. We know a lot of folks involved in the ag industry that does that. But you don't have to be a farmer to be supportive of the agricultural industry. You don't have to work in it to be supportive of it. So we just want to remind folks to get out, be an advocate, listen, and get good information. so that you can go out and tell the truth whenever you're going out and talking about it. So,
That's right. Thank a farmer three times a day while you're eating, because that's where it comes from.
And if you're big like me, maybe more than three times a day.
That's the popcorn and ice cream in the evenings, right?
That's exactly right. So, Mr. Melton, we appreciate you being on the show with us. We want to thank you for this week's information, and thanks to our listeners for joining in. We hope you've enjoyed our show, and we'll make plans to join us again next week for our next episode. And until then, remember, Kentucky Ag matters.